All right, Harley, can you tell me something about yourself?
I am a native of Dipper Harbor. Was born on July the 28th, 1926. I went to the local school in Dipper Harbor where I received a grade 7 education. I left school at grade 7 to work with my father, who was engaged in the fish processing business. He also lumbered in the winter and off seasons.
Where did he get lumber?
He lumbered on private land that was owned by the local people who wished to have their lumber cut. I was one of four boys who worked at home to help build a business independent to fishing, which was a very hard way of life. During the early years, one done well to survive. I can remember when it was decided to build a wharf to bring boats in to unload and process their fish. This part I was not too much involved in, as I was still too young to do the hard work. This work consisted of taking a boat, going to the different beaches to gather logs and timber, which is brought in during storms and freshets in spring along with high tides. In order to get this logs and lumber, we would take a boat, go to the different beaches, use peavies and pry the logs down the beach, attach them to a rope and tow them in with the boats. We brought them to the location where the wharf was to be built. Then came the task of placing the timbers in place. This was done by use of block and tackle and peavies. The timbers had to be notched by hand. They were hewn to form the pattern of the sills, and different pieces went into making up a wharf. And this was all done by hand. The wharf was built, I would say, approximately 125 feet long and about 30 feet wide.
Below your father?
Below my father's home, adjoining my father's property. There was a shed on the wharf to cover two-thirds of the area. This was built by lumber that was picked up on the beaches and lumber that was cut and taken to a mill and sawed. I would say that in this entire operation, no help was hired and very little material bought, except for some spikes and material that could not be made by hand. I would doubt if the whole expenditure would exceed $150. Now, this processing plant went into operation, and then came the buying of fish. I can well remember the long days spent on this wharf. Fish were hoisted by block and tackle from the boats to the wharf. Water was drawn by buckets on a rope where several casks of water had to be drawn as a reserve for when the tide left the wharf. Now a cask, I believe the term of a cask was about 1,200 pounds capacity.
Where did the casks come from?
The casks were brought from molasses, Crosby molasses.
Do you remember what you had to pay for one?
This I can't recall, as I was still quite young when this operation was going on. However, 1,200-pound capacity hoisted by a bale on a rope is no small project, and we had to use several each day. The fish were clean, dressed, split, salted. Some were sold fresh, some cut into fillets, and some were smoked. In this operation, the cuttings of fish were salted and later torn in pieces for fish scrap. The livers were saved and baked for cod liver oil. Sounds of the fish and the fish skins were saved and sold for glue processing. Nothing was wasted. Everything, had even a very small value, was saved and went to market.
And yet you didn't realize a great profit on it. How much did they pay for the round fish?
I believe that it varied, that around 3 cents per round fish was the going price, and 6 or 7 cents was the price for fillet after the fish were cut.
And what about what depreciation is there on a fish?
On 100 pounds of round fish, we would do well to get 35 pounds of fillet. So therefore, the scraps had to be saved and everything used in order to show even a small profit.
That's amazing. And then to supplement this at times, did you say they carried freight on the return?
Yes. I believe it would be about 1935. My father and brothers, which was a partnership basis, although I was not involved, I was still young. Mm-hmm. In 1935, they bought the first truck to take their fillets and produce to market. This market consisted mainly of St. John to the local stores that all handled fish and to some of the wholesalers. And during this trip to St. John, there would be return freight. I can remember where it was considered very good pay to bring a barrel of gasoline from St. John because there was a 50-cent freight on a barrel of gasoline. And a 25-cent freight to take in an empty barrel.
Now, when for the processing of fish, was this done by members of the family? Did you ever hire any, or did your father hire help?
Before the First War, or before the Second War, I'm sorry, before the Second War, my father and two brothers and all the work. There was no hired help. But when the Second World War broke out, my older brother enlisted almost immediately and went in the army, which left my second brother and myself. I was still going to school at this time. And I wasn't too old, but I believe about the second year of war, my older brother, this is a rough figure, about second year, my second brother enlisted in the Air Force, and I left school to help my father. At this time, my father had never driven the truck. And I had to teach him how to drive the truck.
Although you didn't have a license.
Although I had no license, and I hadn't driven too much, only at times when I was allowed to drive was my brother's. So I believe I was 16 when I sent $2 to St. John with a cousin for a driver's license, which wasn't legal because you had to be 18.
Yeah.
However, there's no questions asked. You could send $2 and get it. And from there on, I took over driving.
How long did the fish wharf stay in business?
I would say the fishing process did not stay in business too long, perhaps 15 years. Because during the Second World War, the market began to pick up, and a good majority of the fishermen bought small trucks and began to truck their own fish and sell them direct to the market. And this was detrimental to the fishing business, and it gradually phased out till it was not in operation anymore.
Can you remember much about the overall economic picture, like for the stores and such that was carried on here?
Yes, I believe what I remember mostly would be people by the name of O'Donnell. At one time, they too operated a fish processing plant. They had a large general store which served the three communities, although there were other stores in the other communities, but this was quite a large general store which carried anything you could get or need short of St. John. At that time, we were serviced by a freight boat that used to stop in, and I'm not sure whether it was once or twice a week. It ran between Black's Harbor and St. John, and it stopped in Dipper Harbor and brought freight. It brought freight for the three villages to Dipper Harbor, mainly because Dipper Harbor was the only harbor that had a wharf that could be landed at any time of tide. As a matter of fact, it was the only wharf between Beaver and St. John a boat of this size could dock to at any time. Now, this boat would bring freight for Musquash, Chance Harbor, and Mesa's Bay in La Proe. And on freight day, the teams would come from the different villages. Mm-hmm. And I can recall the wharf being lined from one end to the other with teams waiting for the boat to come in to bring the freight. Particularly, I remember one team standing behind another in which freight was loaded. This horse picked up a bag of flour in his teeth, and he shook it and dropped it. Picked it out of the sleigh. It was wintertime, it was a sleigh, and he lifted it right out, shook it, and dropped it, and the flour was ruined.
It was a 100-pound bag?
A 100-pound bag of flour, which I thought was a great feat for a horse to do.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. However, our roads were not plowed at this time. We never had snow plows. We had to break our roads with horses. And where the snow drifted on the roads too much, traveled through the fields, or they cut trails through the woods to detour the heavy snow drifts. And this was our way of communication. For dates, I could not tell you, but I can remember this very well. Another thing I can remember about Dipper Harbor is a lumbering operation. The area was lumbered by people by the name of Biggs, which later owned the White House Lodge, I believe, in St. John. They cut a large number of cords of pulp in this area. They hauled it by teams to what we call a sandbar. And they unloaded it on the beach into boom logs. And barges would come in the harbor, and the booms would be towed down to the wharf, and the barges loaded with pulp, which created a great lot of activity at that time.
This is the first time I've been told about this?
Yes.
Where was the logs or the wood cut? Did you say pulp or logs?
Pulp.
Pulp.
Pulp, and it was peeled.
Peeled pulp.
Peeled pulp.
Up on the property was, that you know?
It or? Was cut on Devine's property, mm-hmm. I can remember. Also cut what we call Jimmy's Hollow.
Whose land is that?
I'm not sure just who owned it, whether it was government land or who owned the land, but I can remember they hauled a great number of cords of wood out from this direction.
Was it being sold in St. John?
No, it was shipped to, by barge, to the United States, down Maine, I believe.
And were many local people involved in this?
There were a number of local people involved loading the barge and stowing the wood. This was very hard work. The wood was brought down afloat and put on a little raft or float, hauled aboard of it, and then on slings went aboard the boat and was stowed, which required a lot of manpower.
Did they pretty well strip the land of pulpwood then?
They didn't strip the land of like they do today. When they were finished, they only cut the size of the wood. And in a few years, it was grown back so it could be reharvested. But a small growth, they did not bother. They worked around it and left it standing, which in turn, in 10 or 15 years was reusable.
Mm-hmm. Because of the equipment they used then, or because of their sense of preservation?
I believe for both reasons. The work was all done by team, which required very little roads made. And another thing, the small wood was considered valuable and would be merchantable in a few years, and it was protected.
Was it, do you consider it a good place to have grown up in? Are your early memories good, or did you feel a lack?
Perhaps my early memories could be diversified, mm-hmm. because there was no question about it. We had to work hard. We had very little off time. I worked on this wharf, the processing of fish. We worked very long hours. We had to wait until the tide came in to float the boats in order to get the fish. I can well recall a good many evenings when we were cleaning fish, hoisting fish, and doing our normal day's work, when there'd be ball games going and beach parties, and I was wishing that I could could have been able to spend some time there. However, there was very little time for recreation because we worked.
And yet there was recreation available.
There was plenty of recreation. We never had idle time when we were younger. We had always had a good ball team, which we played the different villages, and we always had beach parties, bonfires, and sing songs. Well, there wasn't too much money. Nobody had any money to spend, but we were all happy and entertaining our own way. In the wintertime, we skated. Everyone skated.
Yes, now, there wasn't too much hockey played here because my recollection is that everybody has the long skates.
This is true.
Yeah.
There was very, very little hockey ever played in my younger days. And I believe mainly because there was no money to buy the hockey sticks or the pucks or equipment that was needed, because money just was not available for this type of thing. Although we never went hungry, and we were always well clothed, but we didn't have any surplus. And we did not feel a need for it, because we were occupied.
Did Christmas seem to have a more special meaning then? Because there wouldn't be the treats all year that you just...
This is true. Christmas was a real festive time for us, because we would not be getting candy or each day of the week. I
mean, and not even fruit.
No. You wouldn't see an orange only at Christmas time. And we would have grapes and oranges, and it would really be a festive time and a special meaning, which I don't feel it has today.
What about the part of the church? Do you feel the church played a big part in the development of the...
I believe the church played a great part, because we all the younger people went to Sunday school. We never missed a Sunday. And the older people went to church. The church was really active, and practically everyone attended. And there's no question about it, if you attend church,
it influences
people. It influences people.
Yes.
We had very little crime. We didn't see much liquor. I grew up with a crowd of boys that I don't believe I ever saw anyone take a drink until I was 20 or over, because no one had the money. Nobody cared for it. So.
Now, what was
it? I'd like to say here that thinking back on Dipper Harbor as activity, I can remember when 19 boats fished salmon out of Dipper Harbor.
Did they come from outside of Dipper Harbor?
There's very few from outside, although the helpers that went with the fishermen came from outside. But a few people from Mesa's Bay fished salmon. 19 boats was quite
a
large
fleet. That's a tremendous fleet.
Yes. This was one season in particular.
Could that be in the 30s? It must have been before the war.
It was before the war. Just before the war.
Could that be in the 30s?
Yes. There were practically no boats fished in Chance Harbor. Four or five perhaps, but not... There was no... Dipper Harbor was where the salmon fleet operated from. Laurinville was another place that the salmon fished quite heavily. I can remember when there was very little lobster fishing done in Dipper Harbor.
Can you give any reason for that? Do you think it's cycle or?
No, in this particular case, I believe the salmon fishing and the weir fishing gave way, or the lobster fishing gave way to these two industries, where was felt they were more important than the lobster fishing. At one time, there were five weirs in operation in Dipper Harbor.
Can you name them?
Molly Brown, Back Cove, Island Point, Fisher Point, Devines, Long Beach, where really. And there was one owned by Gordon Thompson. I'm just not sure the name of it. These were all.
Round Meadow.
And Round Meadow, yes. So five wares, which generally takes three men, is to operate a ware, to build it and maintain it, takes care of 15 fishermen.
Was there the uncertainty then with wares that there is today? Have they always been so spotty? Or?
I do not believe. I believe at one time the sardine industry was more sure way of life than it is today, because we did not have the seiners, we did not have the foreign fleet that were depleting our fish before they came on the shore.
Yes.
The same goes to the back to the processing of fish. Once the draggers came into operation, the inshore fishermen could no longer make a living at their line fishing for cod and hake and haddock, which they used to at one time. So it would seem that one would take away from the other.
Yes. Oh, the salmon too has been stopped.
The salmon, I believe, as the old people say, are a fish that run in cycles. They have good years and bad years. And I think that through the years, this has been very noticeable, that salmon will run good for a few years and they'll drop for a few years. But I do not believe it's the lack of salmon that has stopped the industry. I feel the same salmon are there to be caught.
It's pressure of a sports fisherman? Or?
Well, I wouldn't exactly, being a sports fisherman myself, I couldn't exactly say that. But I think perhaps that by our biologists looking at the low cycles, are not thinking that, as the older people did, that they're going to come back. I think it was just a low cycle and not too many fish going in the river, which has sparked the alarm to close the season. I would like to go back now to the wharf and the fish stand. I'd like to mention that the wharf was built below my father's home on the beach, in which there was about, I would say, at a rough guess, probably 75 feet of an embankment. In order to make use of this wharf by land, we had to put a roadway down the embankment to the wharf. Once again, this was all done by hand and by horse. There were logs put at the very edge of the bank, at the approach of the wharf, as a retaining wall. A wall of about 4 feet high. There were drift logs put in there in a crib-like manner. Some of these logs would be 3 feet square or diameter, as the case may be. Now, the approach from my father's yard to the wharf was all done by horse and scraper. The horse was used to draw the scraper, in which the earth was carried down over the bank and dumped at the approach of the wharf. This was a big operation to move an embankment with a horse and slush scraper, in order to make a road for a truck to go to the wharf. And well, I can remember the days spent with the horse. drawing the scraper down and back, which eventually was accomplished and the road was completed. I would like to, especially being in the construction business, I'd especially like to mention that this cost would be no more than perhaps a bag of oats and a little work to keep the horse. The horse was not ours, it was borrowed from my uncle. Today, I would make an estimate that this operation, roadway and wharf, to replace at the present price of labor and equipment rentals would exceed $75,000. And once again, I would mention that this was all done, and I would be very much surprised if it cost over $150. There was some voluntary labor. When I was growing up, if a man was lifting something, it was a normal thing to do to help him lift it. You didn't watch him, you moved in and helped him. When we were younger, if a man was putting in his hay, you went, you didn't wait till you asked. You went in your spare time and you helped that man put in his hay or garden or whatever was going on at that time. It was just a way of life to us where we helped one another. And if a man was digging his potatoes, the boys went and helped pick up the potatoes. They helped him take them to his shed and put them in. This was all done voluntarily. There was no money ever exchanged hands. We didn't have to be hired to do a little work. Also, I'd like to speak on the harbor. As I had mentioned, it's the only harbor between St. John and Beaver Harbor, which can be approached at any time of tide. This was a great stopping place for sailing vessels and vessels that were traveling back and forth through the Bay of Fundy. It was common to see a dozen or more boats tied up at our wharf, waiting out a storm or waiting for tides to go further on to pick up their loads. I'd like to mention here also, particularly because I remember and was partly involved, in April, I do not remember the year, we had a very heavy snowstorm. I believe it was around the 18th or 19th of April, which is very unusual. We had high winds and a heavy snowstorm. When coming on daylight, we were awakened by a rap on the door. My father got up and went down, and it was two men that had been on a sailing vessel. It was trying to make Dipper Harbor in the storm. It missed by a quarter of a mile and went on the ledges just below Fisher Point. The men got ashore on a plank and they walked in to the village, the captain staying at Peter Boyle's, and the two crew walked up to my father's. We were unable to take them anywhere or do anything because the snow had our roads completely blocked. This was a Sunday morning, I remember. That evening, my father and my brother took the truck and tried to make Musquash, but were unable to do it. So they get up next morning and they started with the captain and the two men. And they broke the road through to Musquash and took the crew to St. John. This was an all-day session I believe it was over a foot of snow. It was a gravel road, and the frost was out. And they could not put plows in on the road as it was too soft. So this was quite an experience to have, to get these people back to St. John.
No one was drowned.
And no one was drowned.
The vessel was...
The vessel was a total loss. It was loaded for coal coming from Parsboro. Its destination I do not know, but it was en route to Maine, I believe. And this man, I remember we had to fit them out with clothes because they were soaking wet, and but everything ended okay. They made out very well.
Was that unusually late for snow?
This was very, very, well, as a matter of fact, I never can recall where we had any amount of snow in April. This was high winds and heavy snowstorm. I remember walking out to Fisher Point to see the vessel through the day, and you could barely wade through the snow. It was very, very heavy going. And this was towards the last of April.
Do you remember the old Divine House, or am I interrupting?
Yes, I can remember the Divine House. I can remember when people lived in it. I can vaguely remember, because I do remember seeing the lights where, as a matter of fact, I believe these people that lumbered use the Divine House as their headquarters. I can remember being in it and seeing the fireplaces, and it was just a fabulous house to us boys. It was three or four fireplaces, large rooms, very well finished, and was standing well in my younger days. The house was built of hewn timber and pegged with wooden pegs, fastened with wooden pegs. The timbers, I can remember when the house did fall down eventually, it was all hand-made. I think perhaps it would still be standing if they had not taken part of the house for lumber or another building.
Too bad at that time people didn't realize the value of it.
No, they did not. Yeah. I'd also like to mention that although Dipper Harbor is a fishing village, a fishing community, people made their living from the sea. But I would like to mention that they also each had their own garden. They grew their own vegetables. They kept hens. A good many kept their own cow. They had their own beef and milk and pigs. And this was a way of life. You had to have your garden in for your vegetables. You did not buy your vegetables or your milk or your... You only had to buy the necessary things of life.
You can always remember mail being delivered here then, can you?
Yes, I can remember. As long as I can remember, we've always had mail delivery, although it was 3 days a week.
And what about electric lights?
I can remember when electric lights were turned on. I was out hunting with my brother, and we were walking home, and we noticed the houses were unusually bright. Mm-hmm. When we arrived home, we found the electricity had been turned on.
Was that a big improvement?
That was a big improvement, to be able to go from room to room and not carry a lamp. Yes. Although at that time, I don't think it would be perhaps as noticeable as if we didn't have them today. The electricity at that time was used for lighting only. We had no electric appliances, whatever.
What do you think was the greatest influence on your life, or is that too broad a question?
I just cannot recall anything special. I think my life just slowly formed a pattern. We worked in the fishing business, which I can truthfully say I hated every minute of it. When the fishing business began to taper off, we went into buying lobsters. I was hauling wood for George Thompson in Chance Harbor by truck. When he asked me if I'd be interested in trucking lobsters from Tynemouth Creek to St. Andrews. And I thought this was quite a project. So I came home and talked it over with my father. So he went to St. Andrews, to where the lobsters were being marketed, and made arrangements to truck lobsters for Conway's Lobster Company, St. Andrews. This part of the business I enjoyed. We traveled not only at Tynemouth Creek, but we traveled all over the coast and picked up the lobsters and trucked them to St. Andrews to market. This was the first phase of a new industry. And I believe I was 18 years old when we started the lobster business. I've worked with it ever since, and still today I'm engaged in the same business.
Now, was it because it was an easier way of life? I don't know, your hours are still long. Or was it the contact you had with other professional people, do you suppose, or business people that appealed more? Or more money?
Well, I think perhaps more money would be the answer. Although it was an easier way of life, there's no question about it. You went from point A to point B and picked up your load and took it to St. Andrews. Mm. And once again, you were meeting different types of people. You're meeting businessmen, you're meeting fishermen. And I believe it was pretty much different from the ordinary thing we had been doing. Although, during the fish processing, we did run into a good many business people. There was people that run the wholesale fish markets, and the general store sold fresh fish. Once a week, we delivered to them.
Then you have increased your business. How did this come about?
Well, I worked with my father until he retired 2 years before his death. We were engaged in lumbering. We did cut lumber through the winter. We bought lobsters in the summertime. And I pretty much stayed with this. Then I decided I wasn't being busy enough. So I was always interested in machinery. It seemed to be a gift to me. I could get on a piece of machinery and without too much trouble could operate it. So my first venture was to rent a bulldozer to put it to work. I had a job for it. This I done, rented for a month at a cost of $600. I worked at the month and still at work, so I re-rented for 3 months. This was going quite well in my estimation, so at the end of 3 months, my purchase was applied to the price of the machine and I bought it. And from this, I started a new business, along with still carrying on my lobster business. So I continued on for gradually adding a piece of equipment at a time. And today I own quite a little construction operation, which keeps me busy along with my lobsters.
Just how many pieces of construction equipment do you own, Harley?
I would have to think. Two payloaders, one bulldozer, two backhoes, three trucks, and numerous small pieces of equipment that you use in this phase of business.
And do you not have a sawmill?
I do have a sawmill. I have a mill that I haven't used too extensively, but I use it for my own. If I need for lumber for any operation, I saw my own logs.
And I'm under the impression you own several acres of land.
Well, once again, I'll refer back to my younger days when I was a boy and bought my first car. Like all young people, I was spending a lot of money and time going here and there in my car. My father used to advise me that I should save some money and put it into something I would have. He suggested land several times. I didn't pay too much attention at that time because I was more interested in having a good time, I guess. But as I got older, it began to register and I began to gradually pick up parcels of land. Today I have between 700 and 800 acres of land, and I own a share in another parcel of 180 acres. So I have accumulated a considerable amount of land. And just by recalling what my father told me.
The land value has increased here.
The land value has greatly increased. Much of this property is shore frontage, which has a very good value today. As a matter of fact, any land I feel is a good investment because land is not, there's not any more being made. It's gradually being used.
And you also have another operation, have you not? Four Corners development that's in connection with your land, is it?
Yes, I am a partner in Four Corners Developers, which owns a block of land. We have not decided fully as to what we're going to do with this land as yet, but there are some plans in proposal at the present time.
And you also have a motel.
Yes, I decided I thought maybe that I'd like to have some way to make money while I was sleeping. That may sound strange, but it seems to me everything is hard work. So I felt the motel was a good investment. Perhaps not bringing any results for the next five to eight years, but after that I feel the motel will be a source of revenue that I would have to fall back on.
Well, it seems you've accumulated a great deal since you started out working in the fish wharf with your father?
Well, I feel I've come quite a long ways from when I used to be hoisting water with a drawback. Although, it's been a hard way, and it's been hard to come. I've made some good investments, and I've made some poor investments. I can remember a few years ago I bought a boat, Campobello. The boat was in the water, had new paint, had new top deck on it. I purchased the boat, brought it home. It was leaking quite badly. When I put it on the beach, I discovered that the bottom of the boat, or the hull, was old and very much rotten. The boat cost me $5,500, and I've used it 1 year, and I laid it up. It was of no further use. So.
Well, it's always good experience when anyone makes one mistake anyway.
Well, this is one of many. There's been several. But one thing about it, it's been good experience gained by trial and error, I believe.
Has it been worth it?
This would be very debatable, Ethel. I've worked a good many hours to accumulate what I have now. I think I could be very safe in saying that even today I work from 14, 16 hours a day, with exception of Sundays. And I don't know as I would recommend it to anyone else.
Do you feel some of your drive has brushed off on your boys?
This would be questionable. I've used one boy. I kept him from school this year, engaged him in the lobster business. And I was really amazed at the interest and the work he put into it. He, as a matter of fact, I was proud at the way he operated. So I'm hoping that perhaps is showing on my boys.
I have seen him handle big equipment that didn't seem possible, and he could handle it well.
Well, I feel that, myself personally, I feel that people are gifted one way or another. I think perhaps it's a gift that you can either do it or you can't. It's something like paying piano, that it either comes to you easily or you just cannot manage. And perhaps this could be the case with my boy. I know it was the case with me, that if I operated a piece of equipment for 3 hours, I could classify myself as an operator because it came to me easily. It was natural.
It's a basic aptitude, yeah.
Yes.